The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Good morning and welcome to the Ask the Pastor portion of our program here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thank you for joining us. Thanks again to Pastor Kevin Parbiz as we went through some difficult text in Genesis chapter 27, but there was some fun there as well. You know, I think the thing to key on there is the next time you hear someone talking about biblically based family values, think about Isaac and Jacob and Rebekah and Esau and all those fun characters from the Old Testament. Joining us this morning, our very good friend, we like to refer to him as our resident historian, Pastor Marty Nolan from Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, joins us for Ask the Pastor. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, Roland. How are you?
Has summer arrived in Evansville?
We had summer for the last 3 weeks.
Yes, I know. No spring for you, you remember the soup Nazi from Seinfeld, no soup for you?
Yeah, the weatherman was yesterday, the day before, said that we had total for this year half inch of snow, which is a record low amount, and also we had just had a week of record high temperatures, so I'm sure you've had similar.
We have as well. Well, you know, for someone where, you know, the real super cold kind of goes right into the knuckles, I was very grateful that we had a mild winter this year.
Yeah, I have not complained.
Well, welcome to Friday. You ready for your weekend?
Yeah, I think so.
So you're not one of the pastors that waits until, 10 minutes before the sermon has to be delivered to finish it?
No. Actually, first thing on Monday morning, after I take care of messages that are hanging around, sit down with the text and try to set up things for the Sunday service following, and then just start working on that text throughout the week. It just works better that way, and
yeah,
you're not crammed, and you have time to think. You know, I actually, in the current situation, I have about a 20-minute commute to my house, and what do you do on your commute? Some people listen to the radio, which I highly recommend, KFUO in St. Louis, but we don't have KFUO in Evansville, so there's not much to listen to. So it's good time for me to think about those things. And I start on Monday and keep working on it throughout the week.
Well, coming up this weekend, there's an important event in the church, and I want to get to the Annunciation. But first, I'd like to start, Marty, with a couple of things from the news that I'd like to get your commentary on. First up, this goes to how the church treats people that aren't quite what we would call normal or have maybe issues in their background. Here's the Mail Online. It's the London Daily Mail, their online version. Here's the headline. Casey Anthony has found religion and plans to get baptized to ensure her own salvation. Now, you remember Casey Anthony, that was the woman in Florida whose child was killed,
right,
somehow, and she was found innocent at trial, but everyone suspects that she actually did it. If Casey Anthony wanted to join your congregation, would you take someone like that in?
We accept pretty much anybody. We really do. I mean, Lutheran congregations are not all that picky. If a person is obviously living in sin, for example, if somebody joins and that we know that they are a prostitute or that they are a member of the organized crime. By the way, I served in Oak Park, Illinois.
Oh my.
For 11 years, and that was the center of the mafia in, what was the guy that was up against Sam Giancana?
Oh my.
Back in the 60s. He lived just a couple blocks from our church, and I, at one of the funeral luncheons for my members, I met some of his relatives. And they said, oh, yeah, he was gunned down right over there. And then they just pointed across the street in the basement where he was shot. So, organized crime was an issue in Oak Park, and still in that area, there's still some of those people there. So if you knew that somebody coming in was a member of organized crime, we'd say, sorry, you have to leave that behind. They said, but if I leave that behind, they'll kill me. Well, take your choice. So, there are limitations, but in this case, she has been ruled, whether or not whatever the public thinks, she has been ruled innocent by the court, and therefore, you know, we're not in a position to judge beyond what the court says. And so,
it struck me on two accounts. One, because Scripture is full of courtroom narrative or metaphors, and also, here's what she had to say. She says she figured that getting baptized would be the best way to start a new chapter in her life. She sees it as a new beginning.
Well, that's true, and that's a very good insight. I mean, a lot of people think, well, I'll get my child baptized because that's what our family has always done, or it is, you know, it's a rite that we have to go through. But really, that's what certainly what Lutherans teach about, and I think most Christians do, mm-hmm. that baptism is a new beginning. And when Lutherans baptize their infants, they have a new beginning in the fact that they have a new child. But, you know, several days later, or maybe a week or two later, they have the child baptized. There's a new beginning that happens there, too. And in my Lutheran side of the family, there was a whole lot bigger deal about the baptism than the birth. All the relatives came out for the baptism. And so that's really true, and that's a good way to think about it. And it also puts us in, you know, when you're born here on earth, the ultimate result of being born is that you're going to die. That's the natural man. Mm. But when you're born in the waters of baptism, the ultimate result of that is that you go to heaven to be with Jesus and God and all the saints. And that's a wonderful thing. So birth in itself has some limited goods attached to it, but a lot of bad. But baptism has nothing but good.
Yeah, I think what really frustrates, angers, makes Christians resentful are that people who we deem unworthy of salvation, who really ought to be punished for what they've done, God declares them innocent.
Yeah, that is hard for a lot of people to understand. But that's a social view of morality, and it's not a judicial view of morality. You know, we are fortunate living in a country which has, in spite of what people complain about, we have a very good legal system.
Yes.
I think there are very few in the history of the world that come close to being as good or as perfect as ours is. We've got checks and balances. We've got precedent. We have basis in natural law. We respect for religions, in spite of the fact that sometimes it doesn't always work out. We really have a wonderful system. And so the very few cases where people just are prosecuted for being for no good reason at all. But in the history of the world, and this is one of the reasons the New Testament talks about not going to court. In the Roman court, it was all designed to protect the aristocrats, and if you weren't one of the aristocrats, well, forget about it. Hmm. You know, you end up in court, and you're going to get squeezed because the guy with the money is going to make sure that you get squeezed. That's just the way it worked. So we are really, really fortunate to have a system where the people that really are innocent are relieved, and they get what proper due is. And they're all, again, there's always exceptions. But the way society works, we have our own way of, and there's subcultures about this too. I mean, certain parts of society say, for example, that let's say an unwed mother. A lot of people will say, "Oh, she's a hero," and a lot of people think, "Oh, she's, you know, really bad because what did she do?" You know, and that's part of the debate that's going on with the abortion and the birth control stuff that's going in politics right now. So, where does the unwed mother come? Well, part of society says she's bad, wrong for doing that, and the other part says she's a hero because she's living her independent life this way. But the law doesn't look at it that way. It doesn't judge things in the way politics or it simply looks at, has a crime been committed? Or, in the case of God's court, has a sin been committed? And if not, then why are you giving this person a hard time? So that, in the case of Casey Anthony, the court has said she is innocent. We have to treat her as she's innocent. Even whatever our personal opinion of that, it doesn't matter. At this point, we have to say she's an innocent woman, and that's it. And the other thing is, this also goes along with certainly a Lutheran understanding of justification. Justification says, from a Lutheran standpoint, yeah, we're all sinners. We're all poor, miserable sinners, and we deserve nothing but temporal and eternal punishment. But because God says you are innocent because of the merits of Christ, we have to treat everybody as innocent, as forgiven. And so that when you have a conflict with somebody and you really think they're a bad person, if they're a Christian, you also have to keep in your mind, well, they might be bad, that's the sinner part of them, but they're also forgiven. So I have to treat them as if they're a forgiven person. And so the Lutherans always, if they're thinking like Lutherans, they think about both the sinner and the saint part all the time. And I think that contributes, or that helps us understand what's going on with the case of somebody like Casey Anthony.
One other pull quote from the story. Casey believes that Kaylee, her daughter, is with God, and she wants to ensure her own salvation so that she'll see her daughter again someday.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so it well, you know, do murderers really belong in the... Oh, wait a minute, Paul. Sorry, forgot about him.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
How easily we forget that, boy, I tell you, the hard thing is to, when you're throwing these accusations, to look in the mirror while you're doing it.
Exactly.
Because I think the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew pretty much said, you know, we're all guilty of all of this at some point.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, there's another story that comes out of England that just... goes right to the culture, and as a historian, you are so keenly able to comment on this. Here's the headline from The Sun. School bans children from making best friends.
Say what?
Yeah, school bans children from making best friends. And would you like to know why?
Yeah, I would like to know more.
It's a very short story from the London Sun. It says, teachers are banning school kids from having best pals so they don't get upset by fallouts.
Oh, you mean whenever your best friend breaks up with you?
Or you just have a fight or whatever.
Well, this is life.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, that's weird.
Can you imagine, you know, if these children don't have to deal with confrontation and anger and, you know, some sort of a falling out with, what are they going to function like as adults?
Well, this is really interesting because that, it just put me in mind of the, what is that book? C.S. Lewis wrote a book about British education called The Abolition of Man.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read that.
I have not.
It's really good. And I read it when I went to Concordia River Forest because I was planning to be a teacher. And I thought, oh, I need to read, you know, a variety of people that have talked about education. His big complaint there is that the British educational model, and I'm not picking on the Brits, but you brought up the story,
yeah.
That it was moving in the direction of trying to tell people how they have to feel about things.
Yes.
And so so that when you, for example, see a waterfall, you have to feel a certain way about it. And one of Lewis's complaints was, well, a waterfall elicits its own reaction and different in different people. So why are we trying to educate people in how they're supposed to feel about things? And I think this then kind of comes out with the same thing. It's more of a manipulative way of dealing with people, and in this case with children. You know, we're going to try to protect you from everything bad that happens, but well, you can't do that, and in fact that makes things worse. It's like an overprotective parent. You know, eventually the child rebels against it. I mean, I think of that that group that used to sing "You're Just a Brick in the Wall."
Oh, yeah, heaven forbid.
That wasn't Pink Floyd, was
that
it?
That was Pink Floyd, yes.
Yeah, all in all, you're just another brick in the wall. And I didn't understand everything that C.S. Lewis was saying in his book, because there's a lot in there that's good for any society read, but he was specifically complaining about British education. But then when I heard Pink Floyd, which is a British band, and they said brick in the wall, that, oh, well, that explains what's going on. They're reacting against this overprotectiveness.
Yeah, there is sort of a socialist feel to it where it's not the individual, but it's the collective, the group that is more important than the individual. So everybody has to get along.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, and that's part of it.
Well, you know, welcome to a world in which you have to speak the gospel because, you know, what did Jesus say? I did not come to be a uniter, I came to be a divider?
Yeah.
Well, no, wait, that was George Bush, but Jesus said something like that, right?
Well, and it does give you some, when you see things like this, it gives you some understanding for the differences between cultures. And the Americans, we kind of think, well, everybody's like us. And then if you really get to know somebody, let's say, for example, a Canadian, and you think, well, they're in North America, they're just like us. But if you really get to know, and you're both willing to open up and talk about these things, you find out that, there's some things that are really different. And it's easy to judge and say, well, you're wrong because you're not like us. Well, that's not right. You know, maybe there's maybe good reasons why they feel that way. But, I think that if you read British literature from the 19th to 20th century, you'll see there is a history in that culture of conformity. And that's just the way they are. That's the way they think the thing should be. Americans, on the other hand, going back to our revolution, where it's every man for himself out in the frontier and shooting Indians and shooting Brits and shooting and French, whoever you could shoot, you know. It's the man on the frontier, the cowboy. It's the independent guy taking care of himself. That's kind of the ideal in America. And that's not totally good either. But by seeing these other cultures, you can understand ours. Whereas if all you ever read is American literature, American movies, and just talk to American people, you won't quite understand why we're a little bit different, too, and why people don't always like us in other countries.
Yeah. Remarkable differences. I spent an hour with my good friend Dr. Uwe Simonetta recording a segment for tomorrow's Studio A program, because in Germany, they've just elected a Lutheran pastor to be the president of the parliament.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, a fellow by the name of Joachim. You have to tune in tomorrow at 1.
Oh, I will.
But it's fascinating because now you've got Angela Merkel, who is the chancellor, who is the daughter of a Lutheran pastor, and you've got Joachim Gauck, who is, well, he hasn't been serving as a pastor for 20 years, but very, very active in the peace movement, the overthrow of the Berlin Wall in East Germany during those very difficult times in the mid to late 80s, and actually headed up the commission that investigated the Stasi, after the wall came down. So
right.
A fascinating fellow. Uwe has some great insights for him.
Wow.
But talk about completely different cultures. If a Lutheran pastor stood up today and started to run for president, I think a lot of Americans would disdain the fact that a clergyman tried to seek political office.
Yeah. And Uwe, by the way, I got to know him whenever he and I were both living in St. Louis at the same time. He is just the ideal person to explain to Americans what Germans, well, and even most Europeans are like. I mean, he was German. I think he lived, or he has a house in France someplace.
He does. Yeah.
But you know, often what happens is you have a visitor from Germany, and they're here for a year or two, and they're afraid of offending anybody, so they won't really open up and say what the way things really are.
Yeah.
Well, Uwe, he was born in Germany, but he lived in New York and worked as a journalist there. And so he knows New Yorkers, which, as far as I'm concerned, New Yorkers are a different country, too. I lived there for 4 years, so I know. So he understands New Yorkers. He understands Germans very well. And he's not afraid to explain things. He's just a great guy to talk to. I would sit down and have a beer with Uwe over anybody. Except maybe for you, Roland.
Thank you so much for that. Hey, let's go to the phones.
Okay.
Hey, David, good morning. Happy Friday. You're on with Pastor Nolan. What's your question?
Hello, gentlemen. Mine revolves around this called restitution. I was listening to Tom Baker a couple days ago, and he said to become a Christian, and it really surprised me. He said you don't have to do nothing. And I didn't quite understand that, but I look at this word restitution. If you're a person that comes to Christ and you have done things in the past that were very bad, say you cheated on your wife, divorced your wife, you stole people's property, and then you come to Christ, I would think that he would want you to do some form of restitution. If you're a Christian, you're not going to keep stolen property. You should apologize to your wife, the way you treated her. When people say you don't have to do nothing, that's almost like giving license to keeping stolen property. It seems like, Casey Anthony, I can't judge her if she did this to her child, but it seems like everything revolves around personal. Well, I got baptized. God require you to do some form of restitution? Maybe tell the truth if you did this to your child. You know, it's like a selfish, well, I'm looking out for number one here. Can you, you guys understand what I'm saying? And if you do, can you comment on this, please, on the radio?
Yeah, hang on, stay on the line, David. Pastor Nolan, I think you have been given a golden opportunity to express the most fundamental exposition of Lutheran theology.
Well, this is an excellent question, David. And there are all sorts of applications, and those applications, maybe the way they work out is different, like the example of a divorce and somebody wants to get remarried and do you do restitution or all sorts of things. But the main principle, and this is what Pastor Baker was upholding, is that in order to be saved, in other words, in order to get to heaven, you just have to believe in the forgiveness of sins through the merits of Jesus Christ. And you can't earn, those are unconditional things. The merits of Jesus are unconditional. They're not based on anything that you add to them. All you can do is accept them, because anything that you do, actually practically speaking, anything you do just makes it worse. But in reality, there's nothing you can do, because the demands of the law, by God's law, is we're just unable to keep that. And only Jesus, suffering and death on the cross, his perfect obedience, only those things, which we call the merits of Christ, are able to satisfy that law and therefore work out our salvation. All the other things that happen in this life are just paltry compared to that. It would be like saying, well, a murderer he's pardoned by the governor. And then when somebody said, but he stole the pencil in the courtroom, so he should go to jail because he stole a pencil. See, so all the things that we have in terms of our interactions in this life, even the most serious crimes, they're like stealing the pencil compared to the violations that we have under God's law, because Jesus says, you have to be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. That's Matthew 6, I believe. And the only way we can fill that in God's courtroom is through the merits of Christ, not by all these other things. So that's what Pastor Baker was talking about. So when it comes to the matter of salvation, getting to heaven, there's nothing that you can do. Nothing that you can do. All you can do is accept that by faith. Now when you get to the issue of what should Christians do, as Christians, out of obedience to the law, out of love for their neighbor, out of love for God, there's all sorts of things that they can and should do. But that's not the issue. The issue is, what do they need to do to be saved? And that is, you can't do anything except to have faith.
Okay, say I buy that, but after you become a Christian, if you leave those issues undone, doesn't that make void your faith? Because, you know, the Bible says, abstain from all appearance of evil, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you don't fulfill that aspect of restitution to your neighbor, if you have stolen property, and you just say, well, I'm saved by faith and grace through faith, you know, I didn't do nothing to earn it, then I can just keep the property, would that nullify you? But that would probably nullify your salvation, wouldn't it?
Well, that's the question, but you're presuming to make a judgment on a hypothetical. So, I mean, so the way the Lutherans look at it is, it's the position that we hold is that it's by faith, and faith is, it's a many splendored thing. It's an attachment to God, you know, a personal emotional thing. It's a belief in who God is. It's a belief in what he's done for us, but the key thing that makes the difference is the belief in the merits of Jesus Christ as being our salvation. If you don't have that, you can't go to heaven.
David, I tell you what, hang on through the break. Let's continue this discussion on the other side. Marty, you stay there as well?
I will.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. There's a good one going on today with Pastor Nolan. Stick around. Dr. C.F.W. Walther once told his seminary students, "I wish to talk the Christian doctrine into your very heart, enabling you to come forward as living witnesses with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. I do not want you to be standing in your pulpits like lifeless statues, but to speak with confidence and cheerful courage." Today, Concordia Seminary still strives to do just that.
You gotta love lean beef. 29 tantalizing cuts, each delivering a delicious all its own. 29 different paths to a protein-packed dinner time. From the tenderest of tenderloins to top-notch top round, there are 29 lean reasons to get the grill going that make beef one powerful protein. Learn to love them all. Beef, it's what's for dinner.
Brought to you by Missouri's Cattle Farmers. To learn more about lean beef, visit moobeef.org.
Giving back to the communities we serve is something we take pride in at Thriving Financial for Lutherans. It's part of who we are and what we believe in as a Fortune 500 member-owned financial service organization. That's why we're proud to serve the St. Louis area and those who live here. Hi, I'm Ida Jefferson, your North County Thriving Financial representative. Call me at 524-1151. Again, 524-1151.
I received this letter from a listener. She says, "I love your station. I live up in North Dakota and listen off my computer, but I would really love to listen on the go on my smartphone. Is there plans for an app for the Android phone?" The answer is you can listen to KFUO Radio on your Android phone or BlackBerry. Just go to Wonder Radio, spelt with a U, and download their app. And remember, for your iPhone users, we do have the iPhone app available on our website at KFUO.org.
The mother of an unarmed black teen who was fatally shot by a neighborhood watch captain says the pain is almost unbearable. At a rally Thursday night in Sanford, Florida, Sabrina Fulton quoted the Bible.
"Trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. I stand before you today not knowing how I'm walking right now because my heart hurts. My son."
Local pastors prayed for her and for Trayvon Martin's father that God would bring them comfort.
"Father, if anyone can understand the pain of losing a son, surely, Father, you do, in which you showed your love for us by not sparing your only son, Jesus, for us."
Sanford's police chief has stepped aside for now, and Florida's governor has appointed a new prosecutor. The shooter was not arrested after telling police he acted in self-defense. I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
You've probably heard about Barack Obama's mandates through the Health and Human Services. It forces Americans and institutions to pay for abortifacients through Obamacare, even if it violates a person's religious beliefs. The timing is interesting, considering next week the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on the constitutionality of Obamacare, which is also being forced on you. I'll be doing special programming to give you up-to-the-minute information on how those oral arguments are going. It'll include a summary of what transpired the day before. The court's decision will hugely impact your life and the lives of all Christians who don't want to be part of a system that doesn't protect innocent human life from womb to tomb. Make sure you're informed and tune in each day next week.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to the Ask the Pastor program here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. I'm Roland Lettner. Our guest pastor this morning is Pastor Martin Nolan from Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. And we're talking about restitution. This came out of a discussion based on the story on Casey Anthony wanting to become baptized. David, have you stayed with us?
Yes, I have.
Thank you. Marty, good. Are you there? Great.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Before, David, you asked another question. Was there something else you wanted to add that you wanted to conclude your thoughts? Because we were interrupted by the break. Pastor Nolan?
If I can, I wanted to say, to bring it, I'm going to give you an example out of the Bible where John the Baptist confronted Herod, and he had enough guts to say, "It's not lawful for you to have your brother Philip's wife." head chopped off for it.
Right.
Now bring it down to our day. If you knew, it's hypothetical, but I'm sure it's happened. If you knew a person who had another man's wife, and just because, you know, we glossed over and say, well, Jesus paid for our sins, I don't deny that. But bringing it down to practical issues of today's world, if you knew a man had another man's wife and it wasn't for fornication, they just split up, would you say the same thing to that person? You better have some restitution here and restore that man's wife to him, and tell a woman the same thing. You better go back to your husband. There's a form of restitution. Can you comment on that?
Okay. Well, first off, I want to finish what I wanted to say before we got cut off on the... again, need to repeat that for salvation, there's nothing that you can do. All we can do is receive it by faith. That is the salvation of the merits of Christ. Now, when we get to the issue of how do we live in this world, it's very clear in the scriptures that, oh, well, now we can go do whatever we want, you know, and just break all sorts of laws and not love our neighbor and not love God. For example, Romans is the probably the chief book that at least Lutherans use to understand the relationship between justification and sanctification, or between the gospel and the law, or the law in the life of the Christian. And Paul says in Romans 6, right in the middle of his argument, he says, what shall then we say? Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? By no means. We died to sin, so how can we live in it any longer? Or don't you know that all of us who were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? And then he goes on. But so Paul certainly says, and this is agreed upon by all Christians, that a Christian, the fact that they receive salvation by grace through faith does not mean that they're off the hook of the law, if you want to put it that way, or that they have no obligation, or, as Paul says, that because grace is so free, we can go out and do whatever we want. No, that's not the case. Not at all. So just you have to keep that issue clear, and that's what Pastor Baker was addressing. Now the issue of restitution is more complicated. Now, in the issue, if you want to put it in a, maybe one way to talk about it is in God's court and in human court. In God's court, there's nothing you can do. There's free forgiveness, and that's it. In human court, there is restitution. So, for example, if somebody becomes, let's say Bernie Madoff. There's a good example. He was convicted of, I believe, was he not convicted, Roland? I think he is convicted for the financial problems.
He essentially created a big portion of the mess that we're in today. Yeah.
Yeah. So, or maybe a better example that I'm sure I know about. That's Rodney Blagojevich, who recently went to prison. He has been convicted for a variety of things. So what happened if Rodney said, wait, I just decided to become a Christian, therefore I should get off the hook, right? So he goes to the priest, and the priest says, you're forgiven, my son, but you're going to prison. And Rodney said, but forgiveness is free, you know, I should be able to get off of all this. And so that's the difference between God's court and human court. So the priest or the pastor will forgive the person that, but that doesn't get you off the hook for the consequences of the sin that you've committed. Now, the question that you're talking about, David, I think, is when somebody comes to a pastor and wants forgiveness and or wants a certain status in the church, and then the pastor is in position of judging them. Well, the different Lutheran or the different Christian churches view this position, this circumstance differently. With regard to marriage matters, which is what you brought up, Lutherans have a position that the laws of marriage are determined by the state, And so both the law of marriage and its administration is to be determined by the state. This is something that Luther had a disagreement with the Roman Catholic Church of the day, because the Catholics said marriage is a sacrament, marriage belongs under the administration of the church. And so matters of divorce, or can you get married to your sister, I think that was the issue with Herod, or his, it was his sister-in-law. Those are the things that the church would determine. Luther said no, marriage is not part of the order of redemption, it's part of the order of creation, and the administration, let's say, of fathers or princes, and therefore belongs under the state. So Lutherans and Catholics would have a disagreement on this, as would probably strict Calvinists, and I'm not sure who else. But Lutheran position is marriage matters are determined by the state. So I'm not in a position as a pastor to say, you should go to jail because you married your sister-in-law. I can't make that determination. Now, what I can do, and what I do, is that when people come to me who have been divorced, I do try to encourage, and they're seeking to get married in my church, I do try to counsel them. I cannot force them, but I do try to encourage them in every way that I can to seek to bring about some sort of reconciliation with their former spouse. If they are not already involved with somebody, you know, say as a member of my church and a divorce goes on, I will try whatever I can do without overstepping the bounds to try to get them back together with that person before they initiate a relationship with somebody else. Because really, in God's eyes, that person is still married, even though the state has a different view. And once there's a new marriage contracted, then there's not much you can do about it, because then things just get worse. So it's a matter of how pastors deal with this from a standpoint of casuistry to avoid as little damage as possible. So if somebody has been divorced, we try to get them back together with their spouse, if that's possible. And so that's basically how we do that. And the other issue that comes up that I've found is that when I do funerals, sometimes members of the family will come to me complaining because they're squabbling about the estate. It's, you know, when the husband and wife are gone and all that's left is their kids. And they say, well, you should tell my brother that I should get half of the estate. And this is very frequent. You wouldn't believe how often this happens. And, you know, he's a member of your church, so you should tell him to do this. And I quote to them Jesus, where Jesus had exactly the same thing, where two squabbling brothers came to him and said, make this fair, and Jesus said, who made me the judge over you two? It's exactly what Jesus said, and it's the same thing that I do. I'm not in a position to force people to make restitution. I can't impose threats or anything else. I can encourage them to do the right thing, but I can't force them, and that's all that I can do. So the church is in that position. Certainly the Lutheran Church is a position. We cannot force restitution. People should do that. We can inform them how they should do it. But if they don't, we have no means of enforcing that.
Okay. Yeah, before I go, I know you got other callers, but just one more thing. I always thought marriage should have remained as it is with the church, because ever since it went to the state, a long time ago, I would suspect, you know, we've had all kinds of trouble, no-fault divorce and all that. So I do kind of look at it as a sacrament, to where, you know, ever since it went to the state, there's been nothing but problems. But, hey, I appreciate you letting me call and get my questions answered, though.
That's the point of the program. Thanks, okay. David. We appreciate hearing from you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, the thing is, Marty, that it comes down to this, and this is why I said earlier on that there are some things that make Christians very resentful, like why someone, you know, if Hitler, sitting in the bunker on that sofa, comes to true repentance and faith in Christ, in spite of everything that's occurred in World War II, does God's grace extend to him?
Well, yes, it does. And that's,
well, that's not fair.
I know it's not fair. And that's the story of the workers in the vineyard, where you have people that... Jesus told the parable of where the master hired people to work in the vineyard, and they started at the very beginning of the day, and then he kept hiring them throughout the day until 1 hour before the day quit, before the sun set. So that last worker he hired in the town square. He walked out to the vineyard, and they were already quitting. So he didn't do any work. He was just hired. You know, he didn't do any work at all. And then they all come to the master, and they say, okay, now pay us our wage. And so he hands out the same amount to everybody. And the guys that started at the beginning said, wait a sec. We thought we were being paid by the hour. He said, I didn't tell you that. I told you this is how much I'm paying you. I said, well, that's not fair. He says, well, I'm going to run this the way I want to. And this guy that just worked, he didn't hardly work at all, but I told him I'd pay him this amount. That's how much he's going to get. And so that is an illustration that Jesus uses of how God's grace works. So if you have the blessing of having the knowledge of salvation from a youth, and you've been a good Christian all your life, and you've done the best you can to be good to your neighbor and to love God and go to church, you should not, what you should say when you see somebody like, let's say, a Hitler or a criminal that converts at the deathbed, you say, thank God that they're also saved, and thank God that I've had my whole life to benefit from this. That should be the Christian attitude.
Let's grab another phone call, Marty. Let's go to Art. Art, good morning. You're on Pastor Nolan. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. As an individual who believes the Old Testament is history, and everybody in there was wishful thinking and was in hopes, looking for something material in their life to make it better, how do you substantiate connecting the New Testament and what transpired with respect to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Paul back to the Old Testament? I know the Bible verse, search the scriptures, for in them ye have eternal life, and they are they that testify of me. But I do not believe. I think that Old Testament is strictly history.
All right. Let's let, if you know what? That's a great question for Pastor Nolan, because he is the resident historian here at KFUO. Go ahead, my friend.
Well, I'm not sure I may be getting all the what you're trying to ask, Art, but I think I understand the basic part of your question. And the Old Testament is history. Well, so is the New Testament is history, too. At least this is certainly what we believe in our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and has been the understanding of the majority of Christians throughout the history of the world. It is also true that many of the people in the Old Testament wanted their life to be better, and they saw that the promises that might accomplish that. And the question is, though, whether or not they had an understanding of God, and whether or not they had an understanding of the Messiah, which doesn't really have anything to do with making their life better. Well, the first issue, did they have an understanding of who God was? Well, this is really what it was. The center of Jewish life was the temple. And you can see that in the Pentateuch, particularly the book of Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, where they give a lot of regulations and rules about what the temple is, how it's to be conducted, what the priests are, how they are supposed to do their work. And so that the temple and the sacrifices were a way of relating to God, not as a, would you say, tit for tat. I give God this and he's going to give me something back. There isn't really any of that in the Old Testament per se. What you have is that God gives you a bounty and you give him thanks. So it's not, I'm going to give God and he gives me something back. It's the other way. God gives me something and I give him something out of thanks. It would be like maybe today a child thinking that, oh, if I give my parent a cookie, they'll give me a iPod.
That's a great deal.
So, and the parent will look at that and say, thanks for the cookie, but you're not getting an iPod today. So the idea that this tit-for-tat idea, which is prominent in other religions, really was not, that's, if you look at the purpose of those sacrifices, that's not what it was. There were some sacrifices that were simply praise, or, you know, acknowledging God who he is. Many of them were thanks offerings. Some of them were propitiatory. There were sin offerings. But there was none of this idea, oh, I give you this and then you're going to make my bounty great. It was the other way around. So it would be as if the parent gives the child the iPod today and the child doesn't know what to do and writes a little note and says, thank you, Dad. Well, that's the right thing to do. And so that's what's going on the God side of the Old Testament. And then the other issue is, were they looking forward to the Messiah or not? And it's very interesting to read through the entire Old Testament and to see what is anything going on here that might have to do with the coming prince or with something to do with the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham and Adam. Because those are promises. They're not fulfilled in the time of Adam or Abraham. They've got to be fulfilled in the future. And so if you look at the Old Testament that way and read it that way, you'll see it pops up everywhere. All the patriarchs have some something that's going on that's not fulfilled in their own lifetime. Now, David is a big one in terms of these things. The Psalms are full of it. Luther talks a lot about the Psalms being messianic. And then certainly then you have all the prophetic material in which they're looking forward to the Messiah to come, who is going not just to restore the economic fortunes of Israel, but will bring about a new relationship with God, an ideal situation, as it were. Now, they don't know exactly how that's going to work out, but that's what they're going to look forward to. So there really is, if you read the Old Testament that way, there is a basic theology of the Christ. And that's what Christian theology is all about. It's a theology of the Christ. It's just that they didn't have it all worked out in detail like we have in the New. Go ahead, Roland.
I was going to say, let's go to Harold, who's got a question about or a comment about Zacchaeus. Harold, good morning. Thank you for the call.
Yes, about the individual restitution. I'm surprised you didn't bring up the example, now maybe you did, of Zacchaeus. You know, when the Lord came through town, Zacchaeus climbed up in the tree, and oh, he promised this and that and so forth, and restitution and fourfold or whatever it was. That, to me, that was one of the greatest examples in the Bible of a person who was, I guess he was converted of restitution.
That's a great example, Harold, and it's good to talk to you again. It's been a while. But you see, Zacchaeus does it voluntarily. Jesus didn't say, Zacchaeus, you have to do this. And that, I think, is the difference, is that a Christian thinks about, let's say somebody comes to faith and begins to realize their obligations and their burdens and, obligation to society, their obligation to their families. And as they begin to go through these things, they say, oh, I do need to do these things. And that's where faith begins to work itself out in the life of the neighbor and your relationship to your neighbor. So though Zacchaeus is a great example of it.
We've got about 5 minutes left, Marty. I do want to get to the Annunciation, which is an important day of commemoration in the church. But just real quick, do you think that just by osmosis, Christians just happen to be the victims of karma, that we assume that what comes around goes around, and ultimately, in the end, the scales will be leveled?
Well, that sounds like a Hindu idea.
Well, that's what I mean, is that we sort of assume that if you're a bad person in this life, something will have to be done to offset that, literally for you, before your salvation. It's sort of like purgatory, perhaps.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, well, I mean, that's just not the way it is. And this is the thing. The creed talks about the forgiveness of sins in the third article. But the church, for much of its history, didn't understand what forgiveness is. But if you have had a debt that you're trying to pay off and you can't, and I think there's a lot of people in this country that have ended up in that situation,
yes.
With their houses or whatever, and then the government says, your debt is gone. Well, I mean, didn't the government do that with some companies, by the way? I think they did that with a car
company. General Motors, yeah.
General Motors. President Obama or the presidential administration forgave the debt of General Motors. And now we still have a car company called General Motors today. That's kind of an amazing thing. It doesn't happen very often. But that's what forgiveness is mean it's wiped off the slate and you're starting over again. And so if you've ever personally been in that situation where you, let's say, maybe had a $20,000 debt and you were trying to pay that off and it just wasn't going away, and the person you owed it to said, I'm forgiving you that debt. You don't owe me anything. It's an amazing thing.
It is.
And that's what this forgiveness that we get from God is. It's all wiped away. And that's why it's hard for us to understand, because we would think, oh, well, that especially a person that's done something against me, they should still pay. When God forgives it, though, it's all wiped clean. And me being a fellow sinner, when I also have my debts wiped clean, then I can forgive others. It's the example of the merciful, the non-merciful guy, the steward,
yeah,
that took the guy by the throat and said, you pay me back. And then the king found out about it and sent him to jail. So we are all forgiven of an enormous amount of debt that we can never pay back, and that's what forgiveness is all about.
Now, we have just a little bit over 2 minutes. This Sunday is the commemoration of the Annunciation. Can you tell us about that in 2 minutes or less?
Well, the Annunciation, that has to do with the announcement to Mary by Gabriel that she would bear a son who would be the Jesus. And so it's traditionally, I believe, white in terms of the vestments and the appearance on the altar, because it deals with Jesus. Even though we're in the middle of Lent,
yeah,
it is actually, it's looking forward to 9 months to Christmas. That's how the church has worked it out. So it's really a festival about Jesus. It's a festival of Christmas and the Nativity that comes right in the middle of, but that's the way life works, you know. You suddenly get a pregnancy and say, that was a, oops, we weren't planning for that one. And that's kind of the way the Annunciation pops up in the middle of Lent. You think, wait, well, that just doesn't really fit here. But it does, and it reminds us that the Lord delivers and the Lord takes us by surprise very often. And certainly Mary was surprised at the news she got.
Yeah, the text from Luke, I think probably one of the most understated moments in Scripture. The angel appears, you know, greetings, O favored one, and her response is, or the response from Scripture is, and she was greatly troubled.
Yeah.
Perhaps a little bit more than just that, I don't know.
Well, and we see her true humility, too, and
yeah,
she says, is this coming to me? You know, I'm just a poor servant girl. Who am I that the Lord would be doing this through me? And I think that's an attitude that all Christians should have. It's a true humility and modesty, even in the fact that we have received salvation and baptism and all the gifts of God. Who am I? You know, because many people in the world don't have that.
That is one of the hardest prayers. Let it be to me according to your word.
Yeah.
The preference is my word, but...
Right.
You know, if only he would listen to me once in a while, Marty.
What?
Imagine, you know, if God would just listen to me once in a while, imagine what this world would be like.
Yeah, I wonder, Roland.
Thank God he doesn't. Pastor Marty Nolan serves at Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. Our guest for this segment of the program, the Ask the Pastor program, always fun. Good lessons today. Thank you, Pastor Nolan.
Thank you very much.
Take care, my friend. Have a great weekend. All right, guys, that's it for today. That's it for this week. We are back on Monday with more of Genesis, more of Ask the Pastor, as we continue our journey through Lent. Easter's coming, but we have to go through Lent first. Don't forget that. Have a great weekend. Stay dry. Be safe. We will miss you. Until then, bye-bye.
Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.